20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 439 of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. My name is Andy Herman. I am a writer and editor for Packer Reports. Of course, you can always follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL. Today, super excited to be breaking down the Packers' 34-24 win versus the Dallas Cowboys at the friendly confines of AT&T Stadium. Of course, they moved to 4-1 on the season, and joining me this evening to break down everything is Pack-A-Day Podcast's very own Kyle Fellows. You can find him usually every Friday here on the Pack-A-Day Podcast, of course. But today he's gracious enough to join me for today's post-game show. And really, Kyle, I needed a post-game expert. The Packers have had almost all Thursday night games to the preseason, and of course the two Thursday night preseason games already. So you've done a ton of post-game shows already, so I couldn't think of anyone better to join me tonight. And in all seriousness, I super appreciate the work that you do. You are always fantastically on top of your game, and I'm super excited for you to be joining me today.
Well, thanks, Andy. It's a privilege to be on the show with you, and it's a great occasion to do it as we got to see the Packers win a good game there in Dallas tonight.
Yeah, it's super exciting to be 4-1. And I think, you know, Kyle, probably the best place to start is just kind of our gut reactions and initial takeaways. So I'm going to start with you, just kind of, you know, a 1,000-foot look down. What was your kind of view at this game and the biggest takeaways from it?
Man, this game was a ton of fun to watch. I had a couple guys over, and so I did a little bit of fan watching today in this game. And man, it was really fun to get out early to that lead and just feel like things were completely in control. And then we just kind of felt like things were just kind of starting to slip away from us there towards the end of the game, and you just kind of got a little bit nervous. So lots and lots of fun. Great game. Really fun to see this offense with a little bit different take, with the running game taking such a front seat in this game. And so you go into Dallas, anytime you can go on the road and get a win against a team that's 3-1, you feel pretty good coming out of that. And I think if fans were told at the beginning of the season that they were going to be 4-1 after the first five games of the season, especially with the roster just completely redone as it was and with a new head coach, I think you'd be pretty happy talking about 4-1. And so I think that's where we're sitting today.
No question. And I think it's always interesting, right? So if you would have said the Packers would win 34-24 in Dallas, you know, no matter what, you take that. But there's always this interesting dynamic of when you have this, you know, big 21-point lead, and then you're kind of just holding on at the end. It never feels quite the same as maybe if, you know, they were down 24-17 and then reeled off 17 straight points at the end. Right. But of course, it doesn't matter when they score the 34 points or how they hold the opposing team to 24. If they had scored, you know, like I said, 34 in the second half and had this, you know, maybe it feels different, but it's still a super impressive win, and you're going to take that every single time. And like you said, you're going to take 4-1 every single time as well.
Absolutely. It's a great start to the season, and you can't be happier for especially Matt LaFleur, as he's just trying to get his footing, you know, in this with this new team, and finding success early is huge for his confidence, I'm sure.
Absolutely. And a couple of my, you know, just kind of gut reaction takeaways. I didn't think this was necessarily a particularly well-played game by Green Bay. I thought they gave up a ton of yards, which we'll get to in a moment. I thought they spread the ball around well, but they never really got their receivers going in any way, shape, or form. They, of course, had the three interceptions. Dallas missed two field goals. This was a game that definitely came down to turnovers. But you go on the road, like you said, against a 3-1 football team. You don't have a lot of your weapons, like a Davante Adams, and just a lot of players that either were injured going into the game or that left the game injured, which we'll also get to in just a moment. But you have that type of game, and again, it didn't always feel fully functional, but still a three-digit 21-point game at one point, another 17-point lead later, and it just felt like, you know, they did everything that they needed to win this game, even if it was a little bit disjointed here and there.
Yeah, absolutely. And you pointed out, like, the fact that they did have Davante Adams missing in this game. And I think a lot of fans were really nervous about that coming into this. And we saw the Packers played their offense a little bit differently. And literally ran their offense through Aaron Jones and found a lot of success there. So a little bit different, but Adams was not the factor that maybe we thought he would be as an absence in this game.
No, certainly not. And they had the right game plan getting the ball to Aaron Jones early and often. One other initial takeaway that I just want to get your thoughts on. Can we just touch base quickly on that Aaron Rodgers throw to Robert Tonyan down the sideline? Because that was some absolute vintage Aaron Rodgers. Just break it down. What did you see on that play? And just talk to me about it, because I'm still kind of flabbergasted by exactly what happened on that play.
I'm so glad you brought it up, because I knew talking to you, we were not going to get out of this podcast without talking about the Robert Tonyan contribution. And that was a play where I was just sitting on my couch, and as soon as Aaron Rodgers steps up in the pocket, and looks like he may even, you know, his forward momentum is going pretty fast. So I thought, you know, maybe he's going to run. And then as soon as he sets up and he throws, I just said, oh, wow. Like, I knew as soon as he threw that ball that it was going to be a completion, and you just kind of saw it coming together so beautifully, and the way that, you know, Tonyan came down on the sideline. It was just a beautifully, you know, the way it came together, it couldn't have been done any better. And it's just one of those things. You look at Aaron Rodgers, and I was sitting there talking to a Cowboys fan who came over to my house, so forgive me for that, but he was sitting there and he was giving us a hard time, you know, about how we've transitioned from Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers. And, you know, the Packers fans who were over were saying, yeah, we honestly will just have such a struggle someday when we have to maybe have a quarterbacking our team who is not a first ballot Hall of Famer. So, I mean, that was just one example, one play where this game was really about the running game, but we even had those flashes just in that play where you remember that Aaron Rodgers is quarterbacking your team, and it's pretty special.
Yeah, and as much as I'd love to talk about Robert Tonyan, and kudos to him for making that play, this is not a discussion about what Robert Tonyan did on that play. This is fully a discussion about what Aaron Rodgers did on that play. And it's just those type of plays that, you know, even as Packer fans, you know, we've come accustomed to seeing plays like that through the course of the last three decades. And you see seemingly something like that once a game, but a play like that still just, you just have to take a moment. And even whether you're watching the game live or watching it later or seeing a highlight of it or talking about it on a podcast, you just have to take a moment and marvel at some of the things that Aaron Rodgers is capable of doing at the quarterback position.
Yeah, absolutely. It's pretty special stuff. We are a blessed fan group, and hopefully we recognize how blessed we are.
Very much so. And like you said, someday when that transition happens, it's not going to be pretty, but hopefully they can pick up another first ballot Hall of Famer whenever Rodgers is done playing, and just kind of keep the train rolling there. But that probably brings us a good point to transition to the Packers offense as a whole. Rodgers finishes the day 22 of 34 passing, 238 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions. Packers receivers on the day, a total of 4 catches for 55 yards and, of course, no touchdowns. They outrushed Dallas from a running back standpoint. I made the bold prediction before the game that they would outrush Dallas in this game, and they had done so up until the final 3 kneel downs for Aaron Rodgers, which put them 3 yards behind the Cowboys for a total rushing total. I'm not bitter about it at all, Kyle, but Rodgers did complete passes to 9 different players, and, of course, the big performance by Aaron Jones, 19 carries, 107 yards, 4 touchdowns. Hopefully people out there had him on their fantasy team. 7 receptions for 75 yards. This was a vintage Aaron Jones performance, but what did you see from the offense, and what were kind of your takeaways there?
Yeah, you covered a lot of it, but I mean, they came into this game and they wanted to run the ball. That was pretty evident, and they ran it really, really well. I thought Aaron Rodgers was sharp as well. I know that it's going to be overshadowed by the game that Aaron Jones had, but Rodgers was really a distributor in this game, and he did that job really well. I'm sure we're going to talk about Aaron Jones quite a bit in the show, just by the nature of the incredible game that he had, but getting the ball to 33 seemed like the game plan that the Packers were committed to, and it did work really, really nice. I think we can file this one away as a Matt LaFleur making Aaron Rodgers' job easier with the running game. And today, with the way that this game kind of unfolded, that was enough. And so really special game from the offense from that standpoint, especially when you're talking about the creativity that they probably had to come in with Devontae Adams not suiting up for this game. But interesting that Jimmy Graham seemed like a high priority early in the game, and then maybe not quite as much later on, as, you know, the running game kind of took over and those kinds of things. I was curious to watch to see if that would continue with the game that he had last week. And then the second week in a row that the Packers had first and 10 from the 1 and did not come away with that touchdown. So not to be critical, you know, this is a great game. We're not going to talk about the negatives for long, but that was an interesting development with 2 weeks in a row with that 1 yard stand for the defense on this offense.
Yeah, you bring up a lot of great points there. I think the big one is I really liked how Matt LaFleur and the offense used the running backs in this game. And it wasn't necessarily just Aaron Jones as a pure running back. They got him involved in the screen game. Like I said, he caught 7 passes for 75 yards. They used him on checkdowns. I thought Trey Carson played well. Nothing sexy, nothing flashy, but he ran hard. He was consistent. He was kind of as advertised, everything that we saw to him in the preseason. And I thought he put up a nice performance when they needed him to. And I just thought it was a really great way to get the running backs involved throughout the entirety of this game. And even when they only handed the ball off to Aaron Jones 19 times. So he was the bell cow in this game, but 26 touches total. I think this is kind of the type of Aaron Jones game that Packer fans and analysts and everyone else has kind of been asking for a long time. You don't necessarily have to feed him 34 times a game running the football, but a nice balance of 19 runs, 7 catches, 25, 26 touches a game. He showed exactly today what he can do with that type of production. I know there's the talk about the smaller frame, but let's not pretend guys like Ray Rice, and I don't want to bring up a player that's controversial here, but that's just the first player of that kind of stature that came into my mind, wasn't the bell cow for the Baltimore Ravens for a period of time. And Maurice Jones-Drew, who maybe had a little bit more weight on him, I'd have to look at the height weight numbers on him, but there have been smaller running backs that have been the bell cow in this league. All indications were that Aaron Jones came into this season. I think Aaron Rodgers classified it as a little less flabby. I think he was kind of kidding, but maybe a little serious there. So I think this is exactly the type of game that the Packers and their fans want out of Aaron Jones.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that Jamal Williams is someone that, we obviously hate that he's not out on the field for the reasons, especially that he's not out on the field. But you do wonder what role he would have had in this game. I there were a couple moments late in the game where I was thinking this could be a good situation where he could come in and kind of, milk the clock a little bit and do some of that hard running in the middle just to spell Aaron Jones, because he did take kind of a beating getting all the yards that he did tonight. But yeah, I thought the Packers did a great job. Trey Carson looked comfortable. Like you said, he contributed, even if it wasn't sexy. He kind of allowed the Packers to do what they wanted to do on the ground, mixing things up. So a great night on the ground from the running backs for sure.
For sure. And you could tell they benefited from having that second halfback today. Of course, Jamal Williams goes down the very first play against Philadelphia, and they only have one halfback the entire rest of that game. And there were times where they just had to go with Vitaly as the lone setback because they needed to get Aaron Jones some rest in that game and couldn't just continuously play him. So the fact that they had Carson in this game was a benefit as well. But a lot of good to take away from the offense. Again, I think that 4 catches for 55 yards still shows that they are a little ways away from being able to be a complete team offensively if Davante Adams is out. And I'm curious your thoughts on this, Kyle. I know the big discussion has been that the Packers don't have the receivers they need. Of course, some of the names that have brought up, have been brought up is Emmanuel Sanders or AJ Green, or there have been all the different receivers who've kind of brought up. But do you think that they have the weapons that they need on offense, or is this another indication that hey, maybe this is a little bit too dependent upon what Davante Adams could do? And if you got later in the season and Devontae would happen to miss a game in the playoffs, for instance, this team is not going to be able to succeed because they don't have the weapons that they need on offense?
It's a really good question, and it's really hard because I would not want to give up premium draft capital to acquire a player, especially a player that is a rental. And I think that some of those guys you're talking about, with AJ Green especially being a really attractive option, he's a player that is often injured, and he's a player that is on that last year of his contract. So I don't know what that would cost to acquire someone like that. Emmanuel Sanders is intriguing, like you said. I think that this is a team that's probably going to draft a receiver next year, and I think that because it does take Aaron Rodgers some time to get on the same page with his receivers, I think that Brian Gutekunst will probably take that into consideration. And unless Davante Adams is in a position where he is going to miss an extended period of time, I think they may just look at this and say, like, hey, by the time somebody gets on the same page with Rodgers, it may not be worth it for us to give up that capital, and we'll just continue to invest in these young wide receivers and see what MVS can do and some of these other guys. But Jake Kumerow was someone that maybe some people thought could contribute today. We didn't really see that as much. And then Darius Shepherd did have that one look in the end zone where the penalty was called, and I think he might be something. They might have more to develop there. So I think the Packers will stick with what they've got for a while.
I'm with you on both accounts, and especially on that Darius Shepherd comment. He actually ran that same exact route against Philadelphia towards the end of the game, And he completely smoked the corner on that play as well. It was unfortunate because there was only one safety over the top. And of course, he was playing right over Shepard on the play. And then two, Rodgers just wasn't looking his way anyway. So they couldn't take advantage of it. But he absolutely smoked his corner on that route in Philly. And then he gets the chance to run it again against Dallas and completely smoked his corner again. And had it not been for a hold and maybe a slightly better throw, maybe there's something there. And honestly, Shepard probably still had a chance at that, even though it was a difficult catch. But I do think that there's something there. He shows great quickness in and out of his breaks. I don't know if there's not quite the trust there yet because he didn't play a ton of snaps. There was, I want to say, maybe only a handful. You would assume if you know, things come back and Devontae Adams gets back healthy, that MVS, Allison, and it would seem Kumerow maybe are all still ahead of him. But from just based off of the little that I've seen in him in the regular season games, of course, we saw what he could do in preseason, but it's a totally different ballgame when the regular season hits. I still have liked what I've seen in limited snaps so far.
Yeah, and especially in an offense that's void of Randall Cobb, who we all mournfully saw playing for the other team today, I think a similar skill set. Now, I'm not saying they're the same player, but maybe some of that quick twitch kind of slot action that we got from Randall Cobb is something that we could see Shepard eventually kind of morph into that kind of a player.
No, totally agree. It'll be interesting to see if he can get to that level, but some good things that he's been putting on tape, which is a positive. Let's transition to the Packers defense. This was a really interesting game to evaluate. I'm super excited. I'm always excited to break down the tape and put the grades together, but this is one that I'm going to be really interested to see kind of how players and the team as a whole grades out. Because if you look at it on paper, Cowboys had 32 first downs, 563 total yards, 8.3 yards per play. So just think about that a second. That's 8.3 yards per play. That's almost a first down every single play. They had time of possession 36 minutes and 43 seconds, but three huge turnovers, two missed field goals, and 2 of 8 on third down. So a lot of the Cowboys shooting themselves in the foot, and credit to Green Bay, a lot of taking away the football as well. Of course, Zadarius had 2 sacks, Preston had a sack. You had INTs by Jair Alexander, Kevin King, Chandon Sullivan. And of course we had Zadarius Smith do the beautiful Ray Lewis dance, which we'll touch base on in just a second. But then again, on the flip side, Amari Cooper, 11 catches, 226 yards and a touchdown. He absolutely feasted today. And then Michael Gallup, other side, 7 catches, 113 yards and a touchdown. They did limit Zeke to only 91 yards total on 14 touches, but 91 yards on 14 touches isn't that bad. It was more that Dallas had to pass their way back into the game more than they actually stopped Zeke. They just kind of had to pass rather than, you know, continuing to feed him so that he, you know, they wouldn't eat up the clock while they were continuously handing the ball to him. But this was just a really up and down interesting game, and one of those one that's kind of tough to evaluate when you look at the numbers.
Yeah, it totally is. And with the game, I was surprised when I, like you said, pulled up the 563 yards of offense. Like on paper, that's just, it's just crazy. And I didn't realize that they were 2 of 8 on third down. That's a stat I missed. And so that explains some of their missed opportunities and those kinds of things. But the one thing I think that you may not have said, because you covered so much there, is that the flow of the game, I think, is the one thing that benefited the Packers just with the Zeke Elliott factor. I would imagine that they probably would have tried to find a little bit more success with Zeke on the ground, just limiting what the Packers could, you know, kind of predict on defense, especially with the way that the game went in Philly last week. So just, you know, kind of crazy, like you said, to look at the paper and see the stats and realize what we saw on the screen was a little bit different, or at least the way that it felt. But I'm curious to kind of flip this back to you, Andy. Your thoughts on Jair Alexander, because we've come to know him as a dominant corner, and he made some really nice plays in this game. Obviously, he had the interception and a couple pass breakups, but you listed Amari Cooper's stat line of 11-226 and a touchdown, and some of those, you know, at least a good portion of them were on Jair's watch. So I'm curious your thoughts on the night that Jair had tonight.
Yeah, I'm going to do the coaches, like, we got to go back and look at the film. We're going to have to go back and look at the film. No, but
sure.
I'm definitely excited to break him down. I noted earlier this week he was my only I think he was my only defender that has graded positively in every single game so far. And I think that may very well be in question this game. There were a couple plays where you could tell he was playing in cover four and expecting some help in the middle and just didn't get it. There was a little bit of that. I also noted it's just such a bizarre game sometimes, whereas Jair had almost lockdown coverage through the first four games of the season and no interceptions, nothing really fell his way. He just played good football. And then, of course, on a play that he gets completely beat by Amari Cooper on, he ends up with an interception. It's just that's the way the game is sometimes. It's just so odd. But I do think that this is going to be one where he's going to learn from. And I think it's tough sometimes for a young player when you are talked about as highly, and this is not a mistake. He was talked about highly for a reason. He's been playing fantastic football through the first 4 weeks of the season. This is not one of those where a player gets hyperbole, maybe because of their first round draft grade, and maybe he makes a couple interceptions, but really his coverage isn't that great. That's nothing like that at all. The first 4 weeks he's been phenomenal, but sometimes that can get in your head a little bit. And sometimes when you're going against a really good receiver, you want to play your best and you think that you've seen something on tape. They took advantage of him on double moves a couple times. I had some success with that. So this is going to be a learning game. And here's the thing that I'll say. It's always best when you can have your learning game, your game to bounce back from in a win and in a game where you still had a very big interception that helped kind of swing things in the Packers' favor early in this game. So it's not like he blew this game or by any stretch of the imagination. I think the one that he would really like to have back is the touchdown late by Cooper, because at that point in the game, you're as a defense, you're just no big plays, right? So you don't want to give up touchdowns, of course, but the goal there is to have them take up 5 to 6 minutes to get in the red zone. And then if by chance they do score a touchdown, you tip your cap and you're kind of okay with trading six and a half, 7 minutes for a touchdown in that scenario. But the one thing that you can't allow, of course, is big plays so that they can score quickly. So I think actually on that play, what I think he's going to learn from, and this may seem a little bit odd, is either A, just playing off a little bit more and just understanding the situation, but B, he needs to completely tackle him like before the pass is completed. And he was burnt on the play, and I thought there was an opportunity where he could have just kind of taken his medicine and given up the 15-yarder, the spot personal foul, pass interference penalty, I guess I should say. I think he honestly just has to grab him there and make sure that he doesn't catch that ball and take the penalty and live to see another down. So I think that's something that he's going to learn from, but I'm really interested to see how he grades out as the course of the week goes on and I'm able to break it down a little bit more. What did you see?
No, I mean, I just saw it's the same things you did. And I mean, I think it's important just to remember that this is still a young player and to not overreact to a game like this, because obviously there were some things that he'd want back that he'd want to do differently. But we need to just keep in mind that this is still an ascending player and a player who had a mixed game. I mean, he had some really, really nice plays as well. Obviously, the interception was kind of a gift, but there were a couple of pass defense where he was in the receiver's pocket and did a really nice job in coverage. So he'll learn from this, and going forward, I think you still feel really good about him being your CB1 on this team.
No question. And I think the last thing to note here is, you know, hopefully not to this extent, hopefully not players, you know, putting up 200 plus yards and a touchdown, but which again is not fully on Jair by any stretch of the imagination, but there's going to be days like this because Green Bay is going to play a lot of man-to-man coverage one-on-one with Kevin King and Jair Alexander on the outside, and they're going to trust those guys. And if there's going to be times where they get beat on plays, and that's okay, because with the ability to play one-on-one on the outside, you're helping everything else in the middle of the field. Eventually, I think that run defense is going to be stronger because of it. They're going to be able to put some eight-man boxes when they need to, and they're going to be able to really kind of shut players down in the slot. So there's going to be times, because you're playing so much one-on-one, man-to-man coverage on the outside with King and Jair, that those guys just inherently are going to have some bad days here and there. Now, I'm not saying that this should happen with any regularity or that this is okay to happen, but sometimes with just the innate one-on-one coverage that they're going to be playing, some of these things are going to happen a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. And, you know, again, this is a really young defense, so we'll continue to see how they grow together and continue to put good performances on the field as we've seen these first couple weeks of the season, especially early in games. So,
and can we talk just really quick? Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. But can we talk really quick about that Za'Darius Smith-Ray Lewis dance as well? Because that was fantastic.
Oh, that was special. There was a couple people in my living room who were like, "What is that?" And I was like, "Oh, let me tell you what happened this week." So pretty special for him to be able to kind of put that in, back in the face of, you know, a great player, but someone who's obviously talking about something that they don't really understand.
Yeah, and for those who aren't fully aware, so Ray Lewis earlier this week, I think it was either yesterday or Friday, basically said something to the extent of Green Bay not having a kind of a true alpha on the front seven of that defense. It was interesting because I think Za'Darius and some people took it as they didn't have a leader on the defense. I think Ray Lewis was saying it as they don't have that go-to player who can just absolutely disrupt things and be kind of your go-to when you need it the most. Either way, whether he was talking about a leader, which Za'Darius completely is, or whether it's saying that they don't have an alpha, which Za'Darius has been this year, Preston's been this year, and Kenny Clark has been at times this year and certainly has been over the course of the last couple years. They absolutely have some of those guys in the front seven of that defense. And Blake's been a really good leader at the inside linebacker position as well. So it's a ridiculous comment, and kudos to Za'Darius for hopefully kind of shutting him up a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Great game all around there for Za'Darius for sure. And playing through those injuries is something that you just, it adds to the amount of respect that you have for him there for sure. But Andy, I'm excited to talk about some special teams. Can we do that?
Yeah, let's do it. I know you've been, you wanted to start with special teams, I think is where you wanted to start today. So I'm gonna let you take this one. Go nuts on the special teams, man.
All right. So J.K. Scott is not normal, folks. This is crazy. If you want some more precise data to recognize just how not normal he is, let's just do a little bit of a comparison. So we've got Johnny Hecker, who is currently the Rams punter and has the second highest career punt average all time, if I'm looking at this correctly. And this is some late night number crunching here, but he's averaging 47 yards a punt, which is a good number. But tonight, J.K. Scott averaged 49.5 yards on his six punts, with a long being 58 yards. So have yourself a night, JK. That's incredible. And Scott's 2019 regular season average is 48.3 yards per punt on the season, which is, I believe, a top five number in the league. So last year, some of us were wondering if it was a mistake to draft a punter. And some of us were even wondering if we drafted the wrong punter, if you're going to draft a punter. But now the jokes are on us, because Mr. Scott is playing out of his mind, and saying that J.K. Scott is a weapon has just kind of become really an understatement at this point, because he is impacting the game in a way that has people on Twitter talking about him during the games, designing t-shirts, and Packers are now publishing, I believe, backgrounds with pictures of J.K. Scott. And so this is someone who is, in unconventional ways, finding ways to impact the game.
He really is. And oh, by the way, besides some of the net, you know, average and the average and things like that, two punts inside the 20 today, no touchbacks, and the hang time. It's not just necessarily the length of the punt, but the hang time of the punt has been absolutely incredible. You see a ton of fair catches. You see the opportunity for the defense, or excuse me, the special teams to get down there and cover the punt. So this isn't necessarily just a, you know, he's out kicking his coverage sort of thing, and, you know, they're grasping at straws to try to bring down the punt returners. This is him skying punts and giving the opposing team no opportunity to return, and still, all, you know, at times pinning them inside the 20 as well. He's just been fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I mean, we are all guilty of our criticism last year when we were upset about the punter being a draft pick. So good for Brian Gutekunst, and a great call on his part.
And I'm in the Justice Mosqueda school of thought, where, you know, the draft is only 3 to 4 rounds long, you know, for the most part. And I actually, you know, once you kind of get past that point, I look for, you know, players that you think you can kind of help your team with, whether it be on special teams or maybe they have a specialty type of role. So I thought actually the fact that, and one of the interesting things that's going to be worth keeping an eye on, You have, of course, Jaire Alexander, who's a stud from that draft class. You get a big-time player potentially. And Marquez Valdes-Scantling down the line, who has the ability to be a playmaker. Really good draft, but it'll be interesting because I think there's an opportunity, if you just kind of look at how these careers go, that J.K. Scott and or Hunter Bradley are actually the longest tenured Packers from that draft, because those guys could play 10 or 15 years in Green Bay, and usually position players are just kind of in and out of the league or, transfer to different teams via free agency or trade at some point. So I think there's a legitimate opportunity that with two late round picks, I know it seems ridiculous to spend them on special teams at some point, but they may end up being the longest tenured Packers from last year's draft.
Yeah, especially when you want those guys in your camp and you're not sure if you're going to get them as an undrafted player, you might as well spend the draft capital on them, get them in there, and let them be impact players for a long time for your team. So I think teams will probably start doing that more and more as they get into those later rounds and they realize that these are opportunities that we have to secure players that we're not sure if we would get otherwise. So let's go ahead and spend the draft capital on them for sure. But Andy, what about do we have any MVP awards to give out for this game?
Yeah, and I got criticized last week by Bailey for being a little bit basic, so I'm going to come out today and be completely basic again, and I'm going to go with the completely low-hanging fruit in this one. Aaron Jones on offense, and no questions asked for me. I'm going to go with, the fact that he not only ran the ball well, but he ran through contact. He made people miss. He erased angles. This was a complete game for him. I saw him pick up a blitz on a couple different occasions as well. He has become a complete back this season. I noted earlier this week that Aaron Jones is my second highest rated Packer going into this week, which may have surprised even me, to be honest, because you looked at his numbers going into this week and there's nothing all that sexy about it at all. It was like 3.3 yards per carry, and he never really got going outside of the touchdowns coming into this week. But you looked at it a little bit further, and I thought you saw a player that was consistently making the first person miss. And unfortunately, a lot of times he just couldn't make two or three people miss because there were a lot of times players constantly in the hole. And a lot of times holes just weren't, developing for him. And I thought today they had a great game plan for him. I thought the line blocked better. They got him involved in the screen game and the passing game. And he showed exactly again what he's capable of doing with the ball in his hands. And then on defense, I got to go Kevin King. And this is not only necessarily for the interception, which was an interesting interception. There was certainly some physicality. I was surprised at minimum they didn't at least review it with how things have been going. I love the way that he's been playing. But the fact that he came into this game doubtful on Friday, upgraded to questionable on Saturday, plays in the game, not only plays, but plays well, dropped an interception earlier, hung on to the second one. That was a huge game-changing, momentum-changing play because Dallas had just cut it to 14, if I remember correctly. And I think Dallas had just gotten the ball back after Green Bay had to punt on one of those, of course, amazing J.K. Scott punts. And then Dallas was kind of having momentum, even though they were down 14. King gets the interception, and then they kick the field goal to go up three scores again and really kind of never look back. So sorry, Bailey, if you're listening, basic answers again, but I really like the performances from those two. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I would probably select those guys myself. Those are the two that really stick out. Kevin King, coming in when he starts the week is doubtful, like you said, coming in and just playing the way that he did and impacting the game the way that he did is really, really impressive. And Aaron Jones, not to like brag, but I own Aaron Jones in three out of my three fantasy leagues. So tonight I was enjoying this game on multiple fronts, but did really well for me tonight. But I guess if I'm going to pivot a little bit here to maybe giving a little bit of a different answer, I would say Za'Darius Smith on defense, just because of what he was playing through. You obviously saw that he was trying to just stay out on the field, getting the two sacks, the two tackles for loss, and then really just responding with that kind of leadership, I think speaks. There's a certain level of value to just doing that for your team, even if the impact is not in the stat sheet, even though he did have that as well. So great game for Za'Darius Smith. And then I'll give a little bit of love to the offensive line. Aaron Jones tried to give the game ball to the offensive line after the game, and they refused, and they made him take his first game ball there. But I'm going to go back and look at the game film here, because there's a few plays where obviously Aaron Jones made plenty of his own moves tonight and found some space on the field. But there are a couple plays where there's just such a wide gap opening in the middle of the offensive line. And I'm not sure if it was Elton Jenkins or who at different times. I know we had Corey Linsley out for an extended amount of time, and just who was making those plays in the middle that opened up those holes. So give them a little bit of credit for the room that Aaron Jones had to run tonight, and I think they deserve that award as well.
Yeah, I like those answers a lot, and kudos to Lucas Patrick for coming in and playing some big minutes with Corey Linsley out. I don't think sometimes Corey Linsley gets the credit that he deserves. Not only is he a really good center, he's a good run blocker, he's a good pass protector, but he also gets all the line calls in. He works really well with Aaron Rodgers. Snaps are almost always clean, so which we saw a couple go awry from Lucas Patrick today. By the way, they did clarify in the post game, Aaron Rodgers did, that those direct snaps to Aaron Jones were not supposed to be direct snaps at all.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, those were supposed to be to Aaron Rodgers, they just amazingly went right to Aaron Jones. Thankfully, he was lined up on that side of Aaron Rodgers and not on the other. And Jones took both of them for a positive yard. So what could have been really disastrous ended up being a positive. So kudos on Aaron Jones for that. But besides the two errant snaps, I thought Lucas Patrick did a really nice job filling in. And just going back to Za'Darius Smith for a moment, something also that Aaron Rodgers noted after the game was the players that were playing through injuries, the Kevin Kings and the Za'Darius Smiths, particularly, has seen those guys get banged up and keep going back in. It does speak to the leadership on this team, and Roger spoke of that also as well. But I love the fact that you have this team that is seemingly the camaraderie is very, very high. And, you talk about Aaron Jones getting the game ball. He tries to give it to the offensive line. They say no. It's just that type of team. It's who knows what's going to happen as the rest of the year goes on, right? They have a lot of tough opponents coming up, and you never know what's going to happen with injuries or throughout the course of the season. There's a ton of ebbs and flows throughout. But this just has the feeling of a special team just from that camaraderie and that that teamwork and team, they're respecting each other. It's just special. I don't even know how to put it exactly, but there's that something there that's really special to watch.
I think you see it the most in the guys who want to be on the field when they have reasons not to be. And I think that that's a special thing. Not that we haven't seen that in the past, but you even see guys that are on IR, on Instagram and on Twitter, just blasting out encouragement and cheering on their teammates. And I think that there's something special, and the team has talked about it, but there's something tangible in the way that this team is carrying itself, that they seem to believe that there is something special about this group and that they can accomplish special stuff together. And maybe that they're not even firing on all cylinders yet, which is really fun as a fan base to think that that's maybe possible. But they definitely seem to all want to be on the field together. And you saw that in those guys who impacted the game the way that they did today with Za'Darius and Kevin King and others. So fun group, and it's really fun to see how excited they are to play together.
Yeah, and this was the quote from Rodgers actually after the game. He said, and I quote, "I just think we're just a more connected team this year. We're enjoying each other more. We like each other, I think, a little more. We hang out with each other. The locker room is a raucous environment, whether it's a Monday or whether it's right after a big win. I just think guys really play for each other more, and we have that chemistry that, because of the leadership that we have, that maybe we've been lacking the last couple years." He went on to say, "I like the vibe on the team, and I think we're having a lot of fun." So he's definitely seen it. There's definitely that leadership. He quoted or talked about the Smiths as well and what they've brought to this team. So there's something there, and I think it's worth monitoring going forward because it's worked out really well for them so far. And you can just tell they believe in each other. And I totally agree with you, Kyle. I don't think that they have played anywhere near a complete game yet. And actually, Matt LaFleur said that after the game as well, that he doesn't think they're close to playing a complete game yet, which is really something to think about because they've taken on some really strong teams, whether it be Dallas, Chicago, Minnesota. And really, I know Denver, hasn't exactly put up things from a record standpoint yet, but they got a win against the Chargers today. And I still think that has the ability to be a team that can surprise some teams from time to time. And then, a tough Philadelphia game, even though they lost that one, I thought they were right there with him through the entirety of it. So they have not had an easy schedule so far, and they've really come out better for it at 4-1. But I think this is probably a good time to maybe bring us down a little bit, and that's to talk about some of the injuries, not only going into the game, but as kind of the game went on. And we don't know a ton about the significance of some of these injuries yet. So, of course, Davante Adams, Tony Brown, Jamal Williams were all out injured in this game to begin with, and were all inactive. You then had Corey Linsley go down, and he left for the entirety of the game after he went down. Za'Darius Smith was in and out a few different times. He came back every time, which is a good sign. Also a bad sign that, you know, he had to basically be taken off the field three different times. He's obviously not totally right. Something's bothering him. So hopefully that extra day of rest with a Monday night game coming up can help him out. Robert Tonyan left the game, never came back. Darnell Savage left and never came back. BJ Goodson. I'm not sure on Rashawn Gary if he ever came back or not. I know he went out on that big completion to Zeke Elliott. I wasn't really closely looking to see if he ever came back. I don't know if you noticed anything. But then Kevin King on the interception also left. That's the one after that he clarified that he did not think it was anything serious after the game and that he should be good to go going forward. So a big injury list. Did you see if Gary ever came back at all by chance?
No, I didn't, and I was looking a little bit, so I did not catch that, but good to hear the comment about Kevin King, because I hadn't heard that he clarified that he wasn't too worried about that. So I guess my biggest concern is the Darnell Savage injury, and I haven't been able to find anything until we started this podcast that gave me any clarity on what was going on with him. But he would be a big loss if the Packers were to go without him for any extended period of time, and that's saying something because he's a rookie.
Yeah, he is, but he plays fast and he's very aware, and he's just been a super breath of fresh air in the back of that defense in comparison to what they've had in years past. So I agree with you. I think he'd be a massive loss. He was, you know, kind of walking gingerly on the sideline, but it wasn't like he was in a walking boot or anything like that, which is usually a good sign. So hopefully it's nothing too serious. But on the same token, kudos to Will Redmond, who I thought really bounced back this week, had a couple big impact plays on special teams, but I'm interested to look back. I know he was kind of involved in that big touchdown to Amari Cooper, where he couldn't come and make the tackle after Jair couldn't make the tackle, but I was encouraged by what I saw in him. I'm going to be excited to see how he grades out this week as well, but totally with you. I think Darnell Savage would be a big loss from that group.
Yeah, I know we're talking about injuries right now, but you were talking about Will Redmond, and then we haven't talked about Chandon Sullivan, I don't think at all. And so I just wanted to throw him a bone and say, you know, these are guys that, like, these are below your starter level players that are really stepping up and making plays in this game. Obviously, Sullivan had the interception, and it's really fun to have that kind of depth in this team. Whereas in years past, we've kind of known, like, if your starter is out, you're really going to see a defense pick on that side of the field and really make some plays. So props to those guys for showing up in a big way in this game and making a mark.
And I mentioned this during the game on Twitter, but totally on brand for Chandon Sullivan, who I think really came into this offseason having maybe next to no chance of making the team. And I guess really his odds of making the team were dependent upon him consistently showing out and making play after play, which when I was at training camp, he did all the time. He was one of my players of the day consistently. He played well in preseason, consistently making plays. And now he gets on the field for one of the first times and comes up with a big interception as well. So that has been totally on brand for him throughout this, you know, entirety of really his Packers career so far when he's been out on the field. So kudos to him, and kudos to this scouting department as well, because if you look at some of the players who either were playing some serious minutes in this game or, you know, made some big plays, you talk about, you know, guys like Chandon Sullivan, who wasn't one of their undrafted free agents, but was I believe an undrafted guy. And then they kind of pick him up. I know Philadelphia had him for a little while, but you look at, you know, whether you want to talk about a Jake Kumerow or a Geronimo Allison, Trey Carson, who we already touched base on, Lucas Patrick's an undrafted guy, Tyler Lancaster in the middle of that defense, who played some big minutes for them throughout the course of this season already. So you're talking about some back of the roster type guys who've been asked to come in and play big minutes, and they've produced when they've needed to. So kudos, and Robert Tonyan, another one of those guys. So kudos to the scouting staff for finding those back of the end players who can come in and make an impact when they're needed. That goes a long way in providing depth and providing a team that doesn't necessarily have that weak link, even when one of your main guys goes down.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think that speaks to the obsessiveness of this podcast when we're talking year long about the Packers and we're talking about the 90-man roster and the guys who just seem to have no chance at the start of the offseason, those kinds of things. And it turns out that they're making plays in week 5 of the regular season that impact the outcome of games. And so, kudos to you, Packers fans, for keeping up with it all year. If you knew who Chandon Sullivan was, it's because you paid attention all year long, and he's making impact plays out there on the field tonight.
Yeah, it's a 53-man roster to start, but you're going to, you know, probably see about 70-plus guys play for this team as the course of the season goes along, just with some of the injuries and some of the transactions that take place through the course of the year. And it's those type of players who are going to come in and make an impact. And like I said, kudos to the scouting staff for finding some of those players. That probably mostly wraps it up for us today in regards to today's game, but I do want to take a look around the NFL quickly and kind of discuss their next matchup with Detroit really quick. Of course, the rest of the team will have all week long, plus an additional day because it's a Monday night game to discuss Packers-Lions. But I just want to get your initial takeaways, maybe a matchup or two that you're looking at. They open as 6-point favorites, which I was a little surprised on. But anything that you're looking for heading into Detroit who will be coming off of a bye week?
I think that that's a big deal that they have that bye week to come in, and I think that this is a game where they probably would be favored and probably should be favored. But with that extra bye week, obviously the Packers, I think, will be well prepared for this game. LaFleur will have them ready to go, but that is a big deal that they've got that extra time to get a little bit creative and take a look at this tape and see, you know, what Dallas is able to do, see what Philadelphia was able to do. One matchup that I'm curious to look at, and this is just maybe some fandom creeping in here, but I want to watch what T.J. Hockenson can do in this game. I know he's a rookie. He's a guy that a lot of Green Bay Packer fans wanted in Green Bay, but the Packers had a little bit of trouble stopping the Eagles' tight ends, and so I'm curious to see if Hockenson has an impact in this game. And I think, especially with the injuries that the Packers have taken on, what adjustments that they'll need to make to stop Hockenson in this game on next Monday night. But I'm excited because I'm going to be in Green Bay next Monday night for the game. So I'll get to see this one live and in person with Andrew Mertig and take that one in there in person. So it's going to be fun.
Awesome. Well, hopefully you can bring them some good luck. I just think some of the injuries are going to be really interesting, and I'm gonna go and say that I hope like heck Davante Adams is back, and I hope that Darius Slay is back for them, so that we can see a fantastic Darius Slay versus Davante Adams matchup, which is always fun. But I went back and I watched some of that Lions in Chiefs game, and I think one of the reasons that the Lions had some success against Patrick Mahomes, at least as much success of teams have kind of had against him, is because they're familiar with playing kind of against Aaron Rodgers and doing some of the things against Mahomes that they usually do against Rodgers. And of course, Detroit's had some success doing that lately. So it was a loss that they had, of course, against Kansas City, but I thought they played really well. There's no moral victories in the NFL, but I think that was an impressive performance, even though they kind of came away on the losing end of it. So I think Green Bay is going to have some stuff to overcome, and I like Green Bay's chances, but I'm a little surprised that's a 6-point favorite for Green Bay kind of going in.
Yeah, I definitely think that it's interesting. I think coming into the season, we thought that the Lions were kind of the left out team in the NFC North, and it looks like that they're really kind of putting some things together there in Detroit. So we will see what comes on Monday night, but I think the Packers hopefully will get to work right away. I think there is a little bit of a, you know, this is a big win in Dallas, an emotional win, and so I hope that we don't get a little bit of that lag coming out of this big win, coming into maybe the team in the NFC North that everyone kind of maybe took a little bit for granted as an easy win coming into the season in the division, knowing that this is going to be a team that's ready to go and is probably pretty confident in their abilities, especially the way that they've played the last couple of weeks with Kansas City, especially in mind.
Yeah, if you look at kind of the MO of the Packers and the Lions over the course of the last, at least the Packers this season and kind of the Lions over the course of the last couple seasons, the Packers this season have been a team that have really started out well and kind of hung on towards the end at times. They've usually kind of jumped out to a lead. I'm hoping maybe that Detroit will kind of be maybe a little bit asleep after the bye week and maybe not be quite in rhythm yet. And maybe Green Bay can jump out to one of those big leads again. And then, of course, if you look at, you know, Detroit over the course of the last few seasons, Matthew Stafford's one of those guys that sometimes can put up some fairly huge numbers in quote-unquote garbage time. So hopefully Green Bay can get out to that big lead and maybe they can hold Stafford and company down after that. But yeah, it'll be a really interesting game. Two of the teams that are on the top of the NFC North, which kind of brings us to the Bears losing today to the Raiders. Of course, the Vikings beat the Giants. I don't know if you had a chance to kind of keep an eye on either of those games or not, but what were your I guess the big thoughts on the Bears losing to the Raiders today?
I did catch just a little bit of that game, probably about a quarter of it, and I was surprised when I turned it on and saw the score. And so obviously, anytime you play in London and you cross over the pond, I mean, I think that that's a big thing. Obviously, you know, their quarterback play is something that's going to greatly influence that game, but I think it can't be said enough how much traveling like that impacts a team. And so benefits the Packers that they got that loss on the Raiders, you know, snuck one out on the Bears. I did not get to watch any of the Vikings game, so I won't weigh in on that one at all.
No, I think I was red zone watching during the noon game. So I saw the points where each of the teams were in the red zone pretty much. They were showing obviously a lot of that Bears game towards the end since it was a close game. But, you know, I think the tough thing here for the Bears is, of course, you know, I know Mitch Trubisky's not exactly an all-world quarterback, but Chase Daniel isn't exactly the answer either. And I think, you know, I was a little surprised at the line of that one going in as well, because let's be fair, at the end of the day, I know the Bears are probably the better football team there, but anytime you have a game on a neutral field and the Raiders quarterback is probably a pretty decent step better than the Bears quarterback. I kind of like the Raiders odds a little bit, maybe more than most people going into that game. I didn't necessarily expect them to win. It's not something I would have bet money on going in, but I kind of like their chances maybe more than most. And thankfully they were able to pull out a win, even though Trevor Davis had a huge fumble at the 1 yard line, trying to, take a win away from the Raiders and give it to the Bears there and hurt the Packers, of course. But no, he had a couple nice plays in that game as well, including a big return that set that up actually. But Raiders were able to escape, pick up the win, and thankfully give the Bears a loss.
Yeah, all right.
Kyle, let's just kind of go into some final thoughts before we get out of here. Any final thoughts that you have about the NFL, about the Packers, about today's game, about going forward? I'll let you have the floor.
No, I'm just excited. I think this is a fun team that's going to be great to watch the whole season. And I think this is probably, like LaFleur has said, I think that they just have to figure out how to put it all together at the same time for 60 minutes and play consistently. And I think that we've seen enough to believe that the pieces are all there. And it's fun to feel like the Packers made a good hire in Matt LaFleur and that we have the future head coach for a long time ahead of us. I think you can be critical of a lot of things. You can be critical of those, you know, first and 10 from the 1 yard line situations, but all things considered, things are going incredibly well. And this is a really fun football team that we're going to get to watch for a long time.
Yeah, we've seen what the defense is capable of. We've seen now the offense has scored more points every single game. So every week that the season's gone along, they've scored more and more points. They had 27. They tied 27 and 27 over the course of the last 2 weeks. But you've consistently seen it go up every week. And I think that's a positive. And I do really totally feel that that's the biggest takeaway is they sit at 4-1. The one loss was against a very talented and in a way very desperate Philadelphia Eagles team on a short week. Not that that absolves, it absolves the loss or gives them a free pass by any stretch of the imagination, but that's an understandable loss, I guess is what I would call it if you're going to go 4-1 over the course of your first five games. But I don't think they've played their best football by far yet here they stand at 4-1, even though they've had a fairly tough schedule and are 2-0 on the road against the Cowboys and the Bears. So I think this is a really good spot to be in. I think they have a long way to grow. And even though that they are seemingly very, very banged up at the moment to a lot of key players at a lot of key positions, the one thing I will say, and I shouldn't even say this is the stupidest thing I'm ever going to say, they haven't had any real major long-term injuries yet.
Don't say that.
I know. But it's also true, and I'm not a huge believer in jinxes. So I'm going to feel comfortable saying it, that, you know, they, if you look ahead 6, 7, 8 weeks, they still look really good for when the end of the season is hitting. So yes, injuries have hit hard. Thankfully, none of those injuries, at least seemingly so far, have been of the serious nature, at least any major ones that would really affect this team down the road. So hopefully it can stay that way. There's going to be injuries and there's going to be major injuries and every team's going to have them. But you have to find a way to overcome that. And hopefully they have maybe some of these knocks, but no major knockout blows. And hopefully that can be the theme going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if you get those guys back, you know, if Adams can play next week, great. But really, you know, if you need to give him another break, you know, I'd be all for just making sure when you get your guys back, you get them healthy, because this team is trending in such a positive direction. So, just, you know, take your time, get your guys healthy, and then put it all together. And when, you know, the end of the season matters. So lots of good things to look forward to with this team.
And at a lot of those positions, they do have some really good depth. So hopefully it can stay that way. They can give some players off as needed, stay away from the major injuries, keep things rolling, start putting a complete game together. And this team could be cooking in no time. And I think there's still, you know, a ways to go. I don't think that they've matched what they are capable of doing yet. And I think that's the biggest takeaway from their 4-1 start is they're good and they still haven't been great, which is really a positive. So Kyle, this has been fantastic. I can't thank you enough for your time. I really appreciate it. Really do appreciate all the work that you put together with Andrew every single Friday as well. You guys do great work, and I can't appreciate you guys enough.
Well, thanks for having me on, man. It was a lot of fun, and go Pack, go.
Yeah, go Pack, go. We'll start getting ready as the week goes on for a tough Lions matchup this coming Monday. Again, Packers are 6-point favorites, and we'll break it down for you all week long. Of course, that starts tomorrow as Jake Morley and Ross Uglum. I'm sure they'll touch base on the Lions game a little bit, but I'm sure they're going to be breaking down what they saw from this Packers-Cowboys game as well. So make sure to give them a listen tomorrow. Make sure to follow Kyle at @PackerPundit, @Packer_Pundit on Twitter. And of course, always make sure to follow the podcast at Packaday Podcast. That does it for us today. For Kyle Fellows, I'm Andy Herman. Enjoy your victory Monday. The Packers are 4-1. And as always, until next time, Go Pack, go.